Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good Wednesday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Coach Jen in the Horse Radio Network headquarters Pasture View studio. And you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for November 7th, 2012, episode 526, brought to you by Back on Track Products. Good morning, Horse World.
Big Wednesday, the day you face your own biggest challenge, the day you risk it all. The day you either distinguish yourself or fade into the crowd.
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
Daddy, I want another pony.
I put 40 hours in this weekend, man, it's only Wednesday. I've been cutting this damn heat all day long, there's got to be another way. So I pick up my guitar.
Well, everybody's probably a little tired this morning after last night. I know I am, and no matter which side of the aisle you're on, half the world's waking up happy this morning, and half the United States is waking up not so happy. But I'll tell you what, I thought about Facebook this morning because, all of the Democrats are all happy and excited, and all the Republicans are whining. And I got to thinking, social media can be a double-edged sword. If you're on the losing side, you don't even want to look at it, if you're on the winning side, you're just soaking up everything that you can. But but one good thing is happening today. It's no political ads. That
right.
is the good thing that is happening today. So let's take that and be happy about that. Jamie's not here today. She'll be back on Friday morning, so
just
she'll
be around.
Just
in time for really bad ads.
Just in time for really bad ads. And hopefully we can get back to some kind of normal schedule here next week. We are also back in the studio after having traveled. We'll talk a little bit more about that later on and some fun things that we did over the weekend. But we also have some other things coming up. Do you have it on today's show, Jennifer, or should we just talk about it?
On today's show, we're going to talk. No. I did not take the time to write something pissy or clever.
Okay.
Or intelligent sounding. None of the above. No.
Well, it's
I'm
not going to come out of
me. I'm still adjusting to the time change.
I know. I am too. And it's not going to come out of me with anything pithy or big words like that. So we'll just say that we're going to be covering the Breeders' Cup. We're going to see how we did, which one of the hosts and Frankie did the best, and also which listener won the gift pack of Horse Radio Network goodies. So we're going to talk about that. I have some clips from some of the races here that we predicted over the weekend. There were four of them. So we're going to talk about that. Sorry we didn't get to do that on Monday, but we were traveling home that day. So we're going to do that as well. Later on in the show, we're going to be talking about helmets a little bit, and with the first part in a series that's coming up here in the Horse Radio Network. Plus, we have Michelle Anderson, of course, of thehorse.com. And we're going to be talking to Dr. Nora Greninger, who is going to discuss the 2012 Laminitis Conference. Laminitis is something, obviously, that we're all concerned about here in the horse world. So we're going to be getting to that later on. And don't worry, the political talk is now over. We don't do politics on these shows. So if you really would like to enjoy a politic-free day, you're in the right place. Unless it involves horses, then we bring it up. But I don't see any of that in the news today either. So, all right, let's talk to our deal.
Ann Romney is no longer in the headlines.
That's right. Yep, that's right.
Linda's over. Election over.
Rafalco is now a past thing. Yeah, it has been. That's right. Here we go. Well, my Daily Whinny today goes out to Kaleidoscopio. That's right. Kaleidoscopio is an Argentinian gelding, and if you paid any attention to the Breeders' Cup last week, you'll know why Kaleidoscopio is on my list today for my Daily Whinny. And that is because Kaleidoscopio actually won the Breeders' Cup Marathon, and what makes him unique, and I'm going to play a little clip of the last part of the race here, is you have to keep in mind that Kaleidoscopio, who is out of Argentina, is a 9-year-old. He's the oldest horse to ever win a Breeders' Cup race, and he won the marathon. So let's take a listen to the end of that race.
Field for the Breeders' Cup Marathon sent on their mile and three-quarter journey. They all came out smoothly. They come to the top of the lane. It's all about staying power now. Adigan and Mike Smith, the ones to catch. Adigan's in front. Frankie Dettori and Juniper Pass right there. The grey grass. He's running a game run on the outside of that. And here's Kaleidoscopio. So far, far back early. But now Kaleidoscopio coming with a run in the center of the track. It's suddenly wide open. Adigan along the inside. Down the center, Kaleidoscopio. And Kaleidoscopio, a distant blast early on, is coming home to rock in the Breeders' Cup Marathon.
This horse was dead last, I mean way last, at the beginning of this race, and it's a darn good thing it was a marathon, but at the end he just blew everybody away. It looked like he was strolling, and he had lengths on everybody. It was amazing. Yep. For a 9-year-old.
Yeah, I have an interesting quote from the jockey, Aaron Greider.
Yep.
They told me to detach myself from the field at the beginning, that he wouldn't be in it at all. They said you can close your eyes for the first mile and then pick him up.
He did, too. I mean, it looked like this horse was going to quit. Just looked like the horse was going to quit. And then all of a sudden, at the end there, he just had it. I mean, it's probably good it was – although, you know, he was leading so far down the stretch that he probably would have won a shorter race. But, yeah, 9 years old. So congratulations to the trainer, to the veterinarians, to the farrier, and everybody involved with this horse to keep this horse going all the way to 9 and winning the Breeders' Cup Marathon, which I'm sure was a million or two. So
I think it was actually not – because it was only a grade two. I haven't seen a listing of what the prize money was for the marathon, because it's only a grade two race, so it's not going to be quite so high. But still a chunk of change and a whole lot of prestige there. Good for them.
Yes, it certainly was. You know, there'll be others that might argue with us and say, well, you should be running horses when they're that old. But, you know, they're not. Some of them, if they've been well taken care of, are not washed up. You know, if they've had a lucky life, too, in racing, that lucks
well,
a lot
yeah,
of it.
It's, there are three-year-olds in every discipline that are washed up at three. And then there are others that go on into their 20s because it's, you know, a combination of genetics and good care and stuff. And the horse has actually been racing reasonably consistently throughout his career, but not heavily. At age 9, he only has 39 starts, which only averages out to about, you know, 5 starts a year. So he's not been heavily raced, but consistently.
And that's why, you know, that's why he's still in the game, because
he
hasn't
been
overly raced. You know, we've seen some horses, what was that one we talked about that had been raced like 170 times or something?
Yeah, some of them just campaign heavy. And this one really looks like he's been campaigned smart. And as near as I could tell looking at his race record, this was his first and only start in the United States in his career. So it's going to be interesting to see if he stays here.
Well, and you know, he wasn't not going to have a second career in the racing world because he's a gelding. So I'm sure that's
right.
Why they tried to keep him going as long as they could.
Yeah.
That's about all.
he's going to be hanging out at Old Friends next year.
Right, exactly. Exactly. All right, let's do your Daily Whinny.
My Daily Whinny goes to a group of people, the folks from the United States Equestrian Federation and Georgetown College, located in Georgetown, Kentucky, immediately adjacent to horse capital of the world, Lexington, Kentucky, have announced a new scholarship for USEF members. USEF employees and their children. As long as you are a United States Equestrian Federation member, or an employee or child thereof, you can qualify for, get this, a $10,000 scholarship. Let me say that again, $10,000 scholarship. And it is renewable, so you can get it more than once. Oh, I think I might have lost Glenn. He's gone.
I'm here. Sorry
there
about that.
There you are.
Yep.
I heard strange noises and you're gone.
No, I'm here. Where do they go to find out about it?
Well, I'm going to post on the Facebook page the link on the Georgetown College website.
Okay.
And you have to apply to be a student at the college by a certain date. But other than that, it can be applied to any program. You don't have to be an equine major, which I find very interesting.
Very good.
Because the college offers those types of grants. To give you an idea, most of the grants that I've come across on the website are $1,000 or less. You don't get a whole bunch, but $10,000 is significant. That is worth taking a serious look at Georgetown College. So I'm going to pop that up there onto the Facebook page. And if you're a student or know a student who's looking for some financial aid to a really good college, we know the folks over there at Georgetown pretty well, and they're a great group. Check into it.
Hey, we've had them on the show a couple of times, and what a more beautiful place to go to college than right outside of Lexington, Kentucky in the Bluegrass. Georgetown College is only about, 4 or 5 miles from the Kentucky Horse Park.
Yes, yes.
And
it's also an opportunity to, hang out and go to school in Kentucky.
And, of course, the National Horse Show just finished over at the Kentucky Horse Park, and it was apparently very successful. It was the first time in, I don't know how many years, they said, a long time, that they had saddlebreds there. And they had a little bit of driving demonstrations there. So they're really trying to, the Alltech, National Horse Show is really trying to get back to where the National Horse Show was at the turn of the century, early 1900s. They're trying to bring back that old flavor of what it was back then. So apparently it was very successful. They had good crowds and everybody was happy. Let's give a Daily Whinny to somebody else too. His name was Jacob Pope, and he won the Metal McClay National Championship, the ASPCA Alfred B. McClay Horsemanship Championship, and he is out of Columbia, Maryland. He had a couple of tough rounds, and he claimed the victory out of a field of 152 riders, and the judges, he had some tough judges when you think about it in that world. Hap Hansen, who is a legend, and, of course, George Morris. So, George has won that in the past, the Metal McClay, when he was a kid coming up. Can you imagine how intimidating it is for these kids to have Hap Hansen and George Morris as their judges? I mean, George is not
known. Well, that whole thing is nothing but a pressure cooker. Metal McClay from beginning to end is a pressure cooker.
And we talked about it last year. Remember, we had the winners on.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about it last year, how hard it is to go through all of those different rounds. But second place, let's see here. Lily Keenan, who took the reserve ribbon, and Catherine Tyree took third, and fourth place was Elizabeth Benson. So, guys don't win this too often either, so this was kind of a unique thing as well. Jacob said, I'm still in shock. I bet he is, because that's something that you dream for when you're in that world, is winning the Metal McClay. He's 18 years old, by the way, and as I said, he's out of Columbia, Maryland. Last year it was out of the center part of the country. Remember we made a comment on that with somebody out of the Midwest?
Yeah,
but
it's all over the map. It doesn't seem to be. You would associate it with an East Coast bias because the East Coast is much more densely populated, and a very high percentage of the A shows are on the East Coast. But that's not where the winners. They're all over the map, so it's kind of a fair playing field from that point of view.
Well, let's take a break for Back on Track, and we're going to be right back to find out who won in the picks for the Breeders' Cup and which listener wins the prize pack. Well, hi, Bo, and welcome back to Horses in the Morning.
Thank you.
Well, you know, Bo, I wanted to talk to you this week. You know, a couple of weeks ago we talked about using the mesh sheet and how that really covered the back and, you know, a larger portion of the horse itself. And then last week we covered the saddle pad to use when you're riding. I wanted to talk to you about the leg wraps today. When should you use the leg wraps? And you have a couple of different kinds.
Yes, all of our leg wraps work the same. It's best result is to use it overnight. If you don't have them indoors overnight, you can put them on a couple hours a day and you will see some effect, but best result you will have for overnight.
So these are not wraps that you would put you would turn them out in? It's better
no,
to,
okay. They're indoor wraps.
Okay, so all of your wraps are these particular ones are indoor. And what benefits do we see to the legs?
You're going to see that the legs tighten up because of the increase of blood circulation, and the legs are going to be tight and cool. Wind puffs disappear a bit softer. Especially horses who stock up at night, you will see a big difference with this kind of wraps on.
So it doesn't really matter what discipline we're doing. They're going to benefit almost anybody, whether English or Western or trail riders.
Oh, any horse will be helped by this. Because the horses stuck up in the legs is because of poor blood circulation, and our leg wraps the increased blood circulation 50% in second of the counts.
Did you see them being used more front legs, back legs, or all four?
Most people use all four, but the horse usually stuck up in the hind before they stuck up in front.
Okay, so if you're going to get two, they could also rotate them if they had a pair, or are there separate sizes for front and back?
Separate sizes come 12, 14, and 16 inch. And some people want all the four leg wraps, and you know, they help the horses, of course, if you can wrap all four legs to stay sounder.
All right, cool. And you can find out more information on the Back on Track leg wraps. You can find that at backontrackproducts.com, along with all the other products. And we've talked about the mesh sheets and the saddle pads, and we're going to continue talking about other products as we go down the road here. Well, thank you again, Bo, for continuing to be a sponsor of Horses in the Morning. We appreciate you being on.
Yeah, thank you. Have a good day.
Back on Track. Now, to clarify, the Back on Track wraps are the rectangular wrap part, not the long, skinny part. So you can use any type of bandage on top of it that you like. You can use flannels, or you can use the nylon ones with Velcro or whatever. And if you're really clever, you get the 14-inch size, which for most horses can go front and back. So that way, if you don't have to wrap all four all the time, you can have a multi-purpose bandage. Pretty awesome.
There you go. Very good. Well, thank you, Jennifer.
I'm amazed how often in casual conversation with various and sundry international level competitors in every discipline use this product. You don't hear about it because it's just their leg wrap. But because the rules and regs for international competition for the drug testing are so stringent nowadays, they're scared to put anything on their legs for fear it's going to test. You know, you can spill alcohol on your horse's legs, it seems, anymore and get a test. So it's amazing how many competitors are going with this. And they're thrilled with the results. It's not a case of, oh, I have to use it because I can't use poultice anymore. It's, oh, wow, this works better than poultice. So it's pretty cool.
Very good. Backontrackproducts.com. Okay, let's get to the races, Breeders' Cup races from over the weekend. We made predictions. Remember, we had Frankie Lovato on here, ex-jockey Frankie from Horse World Radio, or from Jockey World Radio. And Frankie made his predictions. Jamie and I and Jennifer made our predictions. And then we had a bunch of listeners that made predictions as well. Some sent you emails. Some were posted on Facebook. So we're going to find out at the end here who won in the listener category. But first, let's take a look at the races one by one. We had the mile, which was the Breeders' Cup mile, was on Saturday. And if you remember right, in the Breeders' Cup mile, we had Wise Dan and Animal Kingdom and those horses. And we all made our predictions of what was going to happen. Let's take a listen to the race, and then we'll see who came out on top on that one. And I just put the ends of the races here, so these are real short.
They are coming to the top of the lane and obviously now tries to shake loose up front. Obviously the leader by two, but Wise Dan now hooks off the rail in the goal camp. Obviously he's got to find more because Wise Dan's taken dead aim on him. Mr. Commons running a big one along the inside. It's Celebration getting involved late as well. Obviously, but Wise Dan now spins full flight for the wire. And Wise Dan strikes the front, sticks his neck out. He wanted to win today, and win it he will. Wise Dan, super impressive. Breeders' Cup mile. Wise Dan won it. Animal Kingdom, like a rocket, will be in a photo with its Celebration, and obviously for that second spot.
Well, there you go. Wise Dan won that race, and Animal Kingdom came in second, obviously was third. And I love that. Obviously, it's coming down the it was
obviously
kind of
obviously was third.
Obviously, he was third. But I, you know, it was really funny hearing him use that term during the race.
It does
but,
kind of play into the whole Abbott and Costello thing, doesn't it?
Yes. Yes, I had to listen too when I was doing the race. Going, is he saying the horse's name or? But, you know, one of the things that's interesting about this race is Wise Dan is really in the contention for the Horse of the Year award. And I think this obviously puts him toward the top of the list. There's a couple of other contenders, too. But at 5 years old, I think we're going to see – I think you're really going to see Wise Dan up there for the Horse of the Year award this year. As far as who picked what there – I think Jamie had actually picked Wise Dan and Animal Kingdom in the top. I had picked Animal Kingdom, but nobody else. And then Frankie got Wise Dan. He had him play second. So, and Jennifer, you had Animal Kingdom picked to win that race. So actually none of us were correct.
Jamie obviously really fouled up everybody's choice.
Yes.
Yeah, he was a ringer.
He was a problem.
Obviously was a problem. And the jokes continue.
Yes. So obviously, Jamie fared better than most of us because she actually picked two out of the top three. Not in the right order, but at least they were in there. So that was that race. That was the mile. Let me
interject here at the beginning of this. Why in heaven's name does the Breeders' Cup have to call every race mile?
I know.
There's the mile, the dirt mile.
That was
pick another name, people.
That was the turf mile, right? Wasn't that?
No, there's two races called the mile.
Oh, that's right. That's right. And the
it's
next one's
stupid.
Called the dirt mile. Yeah. The next one we picked was called the dirt mile. And I think that she put the dirt mile in there because we had Tapizar, Rail Trip, Delegation, and a bunch of other horses that we had talked about last week. And I can say that... I didn't do so well on this one anyway, so let's take a listen.
The Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. And away they go, and Shackleford bobbled at the start. Shackleford was off awkwardly. On the outside, John Scott's making a wide run, but John Scott's running on. Homeward bound, and Tapizar strikes the front in the white cap. Tapizar the leader, MC's gone. Down the center, Jersey Town. Now here's Rail Trip coming with a late run. Tapizar the one to catch. Rail Trip finishing stoutly, but Tapizar's well clear. Tapizar's going to keep Rail Trip at bay. And Tapizar, a sterling performance today. Tapizar and Corey Nakatani take the dirt mile.
And that was a shocker because Tapizar was not predicted to win. It was a long shot in this race and paid $32 to win. Of course, you know, Shackleford was in this race, but boy, he didn't do well at all.
Fire all, no.
No, he was seventh in the race.
Yeah, that's the problem with Shackleford. He's a hit and miss. He's either going to run his heart out or not at all.
And he had come off a long break, hadn't he? He was off for a while and, you know, was off recuperating from a minor injury, I think.
Yeah.
But, he just didn't show up for that race. And then you had this long shot by the name of Tapizar. We had Rail Trip. Nobody picked Rail Trip.
Rail Trip.
Oh, you did. You did pick Rail Trip for number two. Very good.
Yeah.
One of our listeners, Dawn Deems, actually had Rail Trip in the number two spot, too. Jamie, I got to give Jamie credit. She had picked Tapizar to come in second, so at least she had him in the top three.
She the only one that got Tapizar? Yeah, she's the only person that put Tapizar on the box at all.
Yep. So, Frankie actually had Delegation and had picked Delegation to come in third and hit that one on the head. But yeah, it was very interesting to see that Jamie came up with that one, pulled that one out of her hat. So, all right, let's go on to the next one here. Which one do we want to do next? Do you want to do Ladies Classic?
Ladies Classic.
And of course, we had Royal Delta in the Ladies Classic, and that was the one everybody was looking toward. We had My Miss Aurelia, Include Me Out, was also in there. And there were some other horses that we thought might be in contention for that race. Let's take a listen.
All right, Tom, they're all in line, and we are ready for the start of this terrific race. And they're off to the Breeders' Cup Ladies Classic. And they're into the stretch, and it's Royal Delta! Digging down for all she has. Include Me Out running a huge one. My Miss Aurelia's between those two in with a late shot. Can Royal Delta hold on? My Miss Aurelia's trying to get her late. Royal Delta, My Miss Aurelia, here is a champion again. Royal Delta has won the Breeders' Cup Ladies Classic over My Miss Aurelia. Then Include Me Out.
Well, we had a lot of us picked that. Royal Delta, I had picked her to win. You picked her to win. Jamie picked her to win. Now, Frankie had her coming in third because I think I forget who his first pick was, but it was an emotional favorite. also, one of our listeners, Udi Shepherd, picked her to win as well. So Royal Delta really was a favorite amongst us and everybody
pick,
else.
Yeah.
It didn't pay very much either because she was almost 1-1, I think. My Miss Aurelia, Jamie hit that on the head. She got the first and second in this race. She had her in second. You had her in second, so both of you did a good job there. And Frankie had her in second as well. So I'd say we did the best with the Ladies Classic overall with the listeners, all the listeners, and ourselves. The Ladies Classic did well. I wonder, and Jamie would probably know this better than us, is why Royal Delta is not in the running for Horse of the Year.
Well, that was the first thing I thought of when you mentioned Wise Dan. I'm going, hello, Royal Delta.
I know.
Well, wasn't she, I'm thinking of Poverty Grace. Too many really expensive mares going now.
Speaking of Havre de Grace, let's mention that right now. Havre de Grace sold over the weekend, and this is very unusual to bring a very well-won broodmare to an auction, but Faithic Tipton's November sale Monday night brought the highest sale price for a horse since 2008, and that horse was the 2011 Horse of the Year, Havre de Grace. And it was bought by Mandy Pope of Whisper Hill Farm for $10 million. Now,
guess where Whisper Hill Farm is?
Where is Whisper Hill Farm?
It is not Kentucky. It's in Citra, Florida. It's right down the street.
Oh, so it's right down the street from us.
Yes, we can go visit a famous racehorse.
Wow, cool. the five-year-old was from Rick Porter's Fox Hill Farm, and she is only one of a handful of horses to ever sell for $10 million or more. The world record for a horse at public auction was in 2006 for the Green Monkey, which sold for $16 million. And she's going to be, I guess, making babies here in Florida or whatever farm they decide to put her at. She's only the second reigning horse of the year to sell at public auction and the first in a quarter century. Lady Secret was the only other one, which sold for $5.4 million in 1987. Now, did you see anything about why they sold her other than to get $10 million in their pocket?
There wasn't a whole lot there. There are some owners that just are not in the broodmare business, and part of the reason, the big reason that Horse of the Years don't go to auction is they're usually stallions, and they don't go to auction.
Oh, and it does say Porter here. It says Porter breeds very few horses, instead choosing to sell his best at the end of the racing careers and reinvesting in future projects. So there you go.
So he's a race owner versus a broodmare owner, yeah.
You want to talk about a good investment? Porter purchased her as a yearling in 2008, just 4 years ago, for $380,000 and just sold her for $10 million. And if we add the winnings in there and everything else, you know, he did okay on this horse.
Yeah. Yeah. And all the stars aligned there. That doesn't count the 375 other racehorses he owns that
That's
made
right.
$10.
That's true. And, you know, they did predict that this horse would sell for $6 to $8 million, but went way over that and brought in a $10 million. I'd have the sound from it, but the auctioneer was so darn fast, you wouldn't understand any of it anyway. I listened to it.
He didn't have that lovely, he didn't have a lovely auctioneer kind of a voice. He was
he was fast.
Battery one. He's
He was one of those that, and you just don't understand any of it. It's good to have the big board over the top of the head that says what the price is.
Amanda Pope thinks she paid $8 million for it.
That's right. That's right. All right. The last race was the Classic, of course. And, you know, we Bob Baffert was in there trying to win in that race and, you know, didn't have such good luck with that. So let's take a listen to it, and then we'll talk about it. Of course, our favorite, we had the owners on last week, was Mucho Macho Man, and we'll see how Mucho Macho Man did in this race.
Standing well, they're off in the Breeders' Cup Classic. As they come to the top of the stretch, it is Fort Larned and Mucho Macho Man, and they are now well clear of their competition. Fort Larned comes into the stretch in front. Mucho Macho Man runs at him with 1 furlong to run. They've left flat out behind. Fort Larned digs in. Mucho Macho Man runs at him. Fort Larned, Mucho Macho Man. Fort Larned with the heart of a champion. Mucho Macho Man was second, a very gallant second indeed. Then came Flat Out, followed by Ron the Greek.
Well, there you go. Mucho Macho Man was so close at the end that we were, but Jennifer and I were jumping up and down. We were so excited because we thought Mucho Macho Man was gonna just make the pass there.
What a race!
I know.
Now, isn't it interesting? Sitting, and I thought about this this morning because I watched the race again on YouTube, and I saw an interview and a couple of articles that talked to Kathy Ritvo, his trainer. And they were very positive about it. They're a very positive group anyway, the Reeves Racing and Mucho Macho Man clan. How we have such a different perception. If Mucho Macho Man was our very favorite event horse or show jumper, and they came in second at some giant worldwide competition, we wouldn't be nearly as disappointed as if they come in second in a horse race. It's a very, very different emotional response. And it's interesting. That's one of the reasons I could never do the racehorse thing, because I look at it so differently.
Well, they were thrilled.
I
did see that Patty posted on our Facebook page that they were thrilled with second place. You know, that takes down a good bit of change, too. So they took home a few bucks. And they were very excited about it. You know, when you have your horse, Mucho, you know, that they were, you know, thrilled to even bring him. If you remember when we talked to him before the Kentucky Derby, they were just so excited to even bring the horse to Lexington or over to Louisville. I mean, they were just so excited to bring him to Churchill Downs and just be there. And now look at the ride they've had since. And then to come in second by a nose. For the richest race, you know, at the Breeders' Cup, $5 million. They did all right. They did all right. Yeah. And the other one that did all right, over. By the way, let's take a look at how we did on that. Fort Leonard was not picked by anybody at all, pretty much, except Tom Rittenhouse, one of our listeners, had him and had the order backwards, but Tom actually picked every horse in the Classic.
Yeah, 1, 2, and 3. Yeah.
1, 2, and 3, just in the wrong order. Fort Larned, he paid a lot because he was kind of a long shot. None of us in the host crew here picked him at all. So Mucho Macho Man, of course, we had all picked. Now Jamie and Frankie both had Mucho Macho Man picked in second, so they hit that one on the head. Jamie also had picked Flat Out for first, or Frankie did. So anyway, it looks like here are the results. As far as the hosts are concerned, including Frankie in that mix, because he is a radio host, it looks like, I hate to say this, and I'm kind of glad she's not here because she would just be bragging, is Jamie did it. She actually had 3 correct out of all of those, and she had 6 that she picked that didn't come into the right order, but she at least picked them in the top 3. I only had 1 correct. I actually did the worst here, because I only had 3 that came in the top 3. My naming system wasn't working this time. So Frankie and Jamie tied as far as picking the number of horses in the top 3. You were in there as well, so all 3 of you were tied. You had picked 2, so actually the way it came down was Jamie, Jennifer, and Frankie and I in last place. We were tied for last. So it shows you that, who knows. Now, as far as the listeners, and thank you everybody for your entries, we took the listeners who had the correct horses in the right spots. And taking that into consideration, then Udy Shepherd is the winner. So congratulations, Udy. We should get some applause there, Jennifer, for Udy. She was the winner of that particular combination of races. There you go. So she's going to win the prize pack, and we congratulate her and thank everybody who sent in their entries. Tom Rittenhouse, who we know is a race guy, he's not actually a horse guy, he's more of a race guy. Tom, you were right there with me, though. You didn't do so well in this whole picking thing this weekend, and so I feel better being in the company of another guy. You know, you and I will do better next time. We just didn't do so well this time. I did pick the Kentucky Derby.
Thanks for participating, Tom.
Yes, I did pick the Kentucky Derby this year, though. I want to remind everybody of that. I did do that.
Old news. Well, old news.
Well, we're going to get back with a special series we have starting here in a second. But first, I have to tell you about EasySignsOnline.com. And I want to thank the listeners who actually bought signs last week and took advantage of the deal he is going for our listeners because they were buying Christmas gifts. So several of them actually did pay attention and go in there and order early for a very special Christmas gift for that perfect someone. You know, if you want to give a gift that lasts many years, get a beautiful custom sign. Visit EasySignsOnline.com/holiday today and take advantage of a 15% discount coupon only for our listeners here at the Horse Radio Network or your friends. You can tell your friends about this too. You know, so many times we go for gifts that are just don't have any thought behind them and we just go out and buy them the day before. Don't do like I do. Be thoughtful, be considerate. You know, EasySignsOnline.com has a unique website that allows you to choose all your sign options and to see complete pricing every step of the way. It's very fancy in the way it's done, and it's so, so easy. From horse farm signs, carved signs, stall nameplates, vinyl banners, business and church signs, they have what you need for holiday gift-giving season. Combine the 15% coupon with their current offer of free shipping in the continental United States, and that's a deal that's hard to pass up. You use the code HRN12 at checkout, and you'll get that 15% off and free shipping. And you can find it all at EasySignsOnline.com/holiday. We have signs from Easy Signs Online. We have banners from Easy Signs Online. Jamie has her sign for her farm at from Easy Signs Online. Give a gift that shows some thought. Be hurry. These deals won't last long. At EasySignsOnline.com/holiday. Well, now we're in cooperation with Charles Owen and Riders for Helmets. The Horse Radio Network presents a special holiday series called Giving the Gift of Safety, purchasing a helmet for your loved one at Christmas. And here's part one of that series. Glenn McGeek here, founder of the Horse Radio Network. We are excited to bring you a special holiday helmet mini-series, Giving the Gift of Safety, purchasing a helmet for your loved ones at Christmas. In cooperation with Charles Owen and Riders for Helmets, we have created this six-part mini-series to highlight some amazing real-life stories and some tips on buying helmets as gifts. This is a series of short segments that will run on this show over the next 6 weeks. This week we speak with Roy from Charles Owen on the importance of helmet fit, and next week we'll hear the amazing story of recovery from someone who was saved by her helmet. Well, hi, Roy. Thank you so much for joining us on this special holiday helmet mini-series. We appreciate you being part of it.
It's great to be part of something that we're so passionate about.
Tell us a little bit about Charles Owen. You know, a lot of people have heard the name. Some are very familiar with it because they wear the helmets, but there are others who are not.
Well, Charles Owen was started by my grandfather back in 1911. So we've been involved in helmets for over 100 years. Our first motorcycle helmet was actually produced in 1928. And we got our first horse racing helmet in 1938, which was actually won by the winner of the Grand National at the time.
Can I ask what they were made out of back then?
Oh, they were made of shellac and linen combination.
Okay.
And then we had draw laces and concussion tapes and then cork started to come into be used as a shock absorber before we now get into the more modern materials.
Huh. Oh, very interesting. Okay.
So Charles Owen really was trying to produce helmets that were very much at the leading edge, and we got involved very early on, back in the early 50s, in the standards committees, which actually helped to develop the attributes of a helmet and what we need in a helmet, and develop the research from the doctors and the accident research people to really understand what we were trying to produce.
You know, obviously up to modern day, where you have a wide selection and variety of helmets at Charles Owen to cover a number of disciplines.
Oh, yes. We have the largest range of safety products, which allows people to really decide on their own style. They're not kind of wearing a helmet for a helmet's sake, but now it's become very much part of the outfit. And we've seen this now with the dressage communities now starting to come on board, and they are looking for their own style to complement their overall picture.
And as we get through this series over the next couple of weeks, we're going to talk a little bit about style and function, and also we're going to talk about understanding the standards and the certifications and everything that goes into helmets so people know what they're looking for when they go shopping for one. Today we want to talk a little bit about helmet fit, and you know, we're talking in this series about giving the gift of safety, basically purchasing a helmet for your loved ones at the holidays, at Christmas time, how it's the perfect gift. But one of the things that we have to be aware of is fit, don't we?
Oh, absolutely. And there is, I must totally agree with, there is no better gift than giving the gift of safety. And often when people approach this, they spend a lot of time perusing what type of model they're going to buy and the, you know, trying to understand the technologies that people are talking about. But really, that's very much only part of the story. It's thinking about how do you get the helmet to fit the person you're buying the helmet for. I mean, there are many, many accidents that we investigate where helmets have not fit properly and the person has had either a severe injury or has actually died just because the helmet didn't fit. There was nothing wrong with the helmet, but the helmet actually shifted during the accident and exposed the head, and that's not given, and so you got no protection at all.
Now, as far as helmet fit itself is concerned, they are to be fairly snug, and the general rule of thumb I always heard was like a finger's length above the eyebrow.
I mean, some people, depending on the depth of your head, depends on how far it comes down, and some people really do like to have the helmet right down on the eyebrows so they can see the edge of the helmet. It kind of gives them that ring of confidence that they've got something that's going to protect them. But the general rule is, yes, about 3/4 inch above the eyebrows allows a little bit of air to get into the forehead and keep the rider cool. I often, for people who've never experienced a helmet, I normally say it's a bit like buying a new pair of boots or a new pair of good shoes. They're going to be supportive, they're going to be a little bit tight, and you're not going to expect to wear them for 8 hours on the first outing. So often with a new helmet, to try it wearing it around the house rather than actually on horseback. So if it does get a little bit tight in the place, you can just lift the helmet, because what happens is if you have an area of tightness, your head expands in that part of tightness. And, of course, because you've made your head bigger in that area, it actually makes it tighter. And so, therefore, you get this whole vicious circle of pain and tightness. So just lifting the helmet off your head allows your head to revert to its original head shape, and the helmet would have been stretched a little bit in that place. So just wearing it for an hour or so just around the house will help to break in the helmet. And the more often you put it on and off your head, it's the best way to break a helmet in. So the fit of the helmet is really important. And, of course, when you're buying it for somebody else, you need to have a few strategies to arrange a correct helmet for them. So maybe the first strategy, which is kind of the easiest, is if the person's already got a helmet and you're thinking, this helmet's getting a bit tired, maybe we need, you know, they would like to have a new fresh helmet of the same style, you can obviously look inside the helmet and take a note of the model and the size, and of course just order a replacement for them, hoping that their original helmet fit okay. But of course, often when we do helmet checks, we find that helmets don't fit okay. Sometimes people have got helmets that are three sizes too big for them. And so you have to have another strategy for this. So we would always suggest you find a local retailer. In fact, we do a lot of training of retailers and give and issue certification certificates to the employees that we actually train. Because obviously it's not the store that we train, it's the individuals inside it. And if that individual isn't serving you, then you're not going to be getting the best experience. So that's the first thing to search. And if you do have a problem finding somebody, then we would only be too happy over our website to answer any questions about finding a retailer that would suit. So thinking about you're not sure what type of helmet is going to work for them, the first thing is getting a gift card for them, which specifies that you want to have this gift card go towards a helmet purchase. And most retailers will issue a gift card. Now, if we want to step it up a bit and really kind of get this sense that you're trying to give a gift of safety, then maybe having the card for an appointment with a professional helmet fitter would actually really emphasize that you do take care. This is not just a product you're purchasing. You're actually going to be purchasing an experience for them. And they're actually perhaps very, very first time in their life, they might have actually been going for a professional helmet fitting. So talk to your local retailer about whether that's something they can offer. Something else that you could do if you're just feeling that you can't arrange for that helmet fitting to take place is perhaps buying something a little bit on the larger size, because, you know, when you open up the present, the worst thing is when you can't even get the helmet on your head. So buying something a little bit on the big side. But there's a big warning here. A lot of stores will not accept return helmets. They often have it. So if you are going to buy something that you're intending to return or have it refitted, do make sure that the store is going to be happy, because some stores will only allow gift certificates and won't allow you to return the helmet. And then, of course, that's a real nightmare.
And I might offer another alternative, too, is that you take the person early, forget about the surprise, tell them you're buying the helmet for them for the holidays, and let them start wearing it right away. So they get the protection immediately, and you still are getting them the gift of safety. So,
that's a great, great suggestion. Now, an area that also that a lot of people ignore about fitting, and in fact, some stores actually don't do this for you because they expect the customer to do it themselves, is adjusting the harness. They kind of fit the helmet on your head, and then they just kind of leave you to do the straps. So when you have the helmet fitted, do make sure that they take care to adjust the strap underneath your chin as well as the adjustment systems at the rear of the head. Because if those systems are not adjusted correctly, it's quite possible for the helmet to actually fly off the head during the fall. And, of course, then the whole of the rest of the fitting system has been rendered useless.
Something else that I've seen a thousand times over, and a lot of people don't realize that if your helmet, your current helmet, is more than 5 years old, you should replace it.
I mean, 5 years of, you know, an average user. I mean, if you're somebody that rides every day, it's probably going to be a shorter life than that.
Where can people learn more about the Charles Owens helmets that are available for the holidays?
Well, our website is a great place to start. It has all our whole range, but it's always worthwhile just popping down to your local retailer who has a good selection of helmets.
Thank you, Roy. We'll be back again next time to talk about the standards and certifications inside a helmet and what do they mean. Thank you to Riders for Helmets for everything they do for helmet awareness and safety. You can visit them at ridersfor4helmets.com. And thank you to Charles Owen. You can visit them at charlesowen.co.uk. Back next week with the amazing story of a woman who survived a very tragic fall thanks to her helmet. Well, you're back. That's right. Christmas music. Can you believe that, Jennifer? It's that time of year again. You know, I think you're – hey, Jennifer, I think you're on mute. Let's take you off of mute. There you go. Now you can talk.
Don't go there. Oh,
it's
not
that
ready.
Time of year. I know.
Can I please
I know.
Have Turkey Day before we talk about Christmas?
You know, we were just looking at that. Jennifer and I had the we want to thank our friends down there at Wright Lead Equestrian Center. We had a great time over the weekend. We got down in Louisiana. We got to visit some unique places. I don't think Jennifer's favorite was the French Quarter in New Orleans because there was just too many people and too much drunkenness. But we did have a good time. We went on a boat trip while we were down there. We did the paddle boat.
Cool.
The last paddle boat that's actually powered by the paddle. We did a two-hour cruise with that and had a calliope on top. It was pretty cool. And then we got to see some cool things in Baton Rouge and got to visit some old
friends.
I got to go riding with Michelle. That's right.
Yeah. I got to meet her nifty Cleveland Bay Emma. What an awesome horse.
And you rode a Palomino, right?
Buckskin. Close, Glenn. He's yellow. Okay. You're close.
Yes. He rode a buckskin. Who was he? This could be.
He's a sweetheart. His name's Spirit. He's named after the main character in The Stallion of Cimarron, the animated movie.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. He was a good egg. Yeah. He wasn't impressed with me at all.
We were making a comment as we were driving home. It's about a 10-hour trip, I guess, from here in Ocala. That. We probably, on the vacations we've had some of the best food on this vacation.
By far. I want to congratulate Rick and Michelle for making excellent choices, both in-house and at restaurants. This one rated in the top five best food vacations we've taken.
Yes. And that's partly because Jennifer and I like things to have a little bit of spice, and so many restaurants are just afraid to do that. Not Louisiana, boy.
No,
all about spice.
I had my very first muffalata. That was cool.
Yes, it was very good too.
Yeah, it's a muffalata. For those who are not familiar, is basically a sandwich on herbed bread with a roll, and it's basically a cold cut sandwich with olive salad on it. It just sounds like it shouldn't taste good, but it really does.
Yeah, and they grill it and make it all hot. It was good. We had that at Patio's. Down in the French Quarter. So, and we posted a picture of us hanging out down there in the French Quarter on our Facebook page yesterday. But we got to see a lot of the sites down there, so that was terrific. It was a great, fun little trip. Well, we're going to take a break for our song right after this word from Equestrian Collections, and we're coming back to talk about laminitis with thehorse.com. Hi, Glenn here from the Horse Radio Network, and I'm with Debbie from Equestrian Collections. How are you, Debbie?
Hi, Glenn. I'm just great. And this week I wanted to feature something that we have on our website, www.equestriancollections.com. You know, a lot of people say, are you only online? Well, you know what? We have taken care of that for you. We are online, but we're also catalogs online. If you go to our website and at the very top of the page of the homepage, you will see a little box that says catalogs. You click on that and all the catalogs from our different vendors come up. All you have to do is click on any one of them and it opens up just like a book. It's just really cool. You just click at the bottom of the page and the page turns as if you were looking at a catalog, sitting there in bed or something. But the best part of this kind of catalog is if you click on it and we have this item available, all you have to do is click on it. It takes you right over so you can order it right there. So it's very convenient, and you can look at all the different things and just spend all day doing that if you'd like, because we've got plenty of them.
I do really like the fact that you're looking at the manufacturer's catalog, and if you guys have it, you can just click on it. It takes you to the order page. If you don't have it, it just pops up with a little thing that says item not available, so you know exactly what you can get, what you can't get.
That's exactly right, and that's such a help, too, because, you know, if we can't get it, then you can't get it. So here we go. You'll know right away if you can get it from us.
Very good. That's go to EquestrianCollections.com, the catalogs tab at the top of the page at EquestrianCollections.com. Is Templeton Thompson with Happy House. And we hope that your house is happy today. You should be happy because there's no more political ads for at least another probably year. So you've had a good year off anyway. You are listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek here with Coach Jen. Jamie is off today. She'll be back on Friday. Hopefully next week we can get back to some kind of normal schedule here. We've been traveling and on the road and showing and all kinds of things. Jamie will tell us all about her show on Friday and how that went over the weekend. I don't even know. I didn't look yet. I didn't want to know. So I didn't cheat. I haven't talked to her at all. So we'll find out about that on Friday as well. The Horse.com segment today is sponsored by Dr. Rose's Remedy, developed by veterinarian Dr. Rose DeLiva. The Dr. Rose's Remedy skin treatment salve and spray are an all-natural product, which are anti-inflammatory, antiviral, antifungal, antiseptic, and anti-scarring, pretty much anti-everything. They work to promote the healing of skin rashes, relieve inflammation and irritation, promote the healing of wounds, and moisturize the skin of horses. Dr. Rose's Remedies can be used in a wide variety of animals, including dogs, cats, and horses. It's been very effective at treating anything from rain rot to scratches and abrasions. We use it here. We've used it for years on our horses. We keep it all around all the time for Beaker and our dog Glory. It's perfect for those small cuts and scrapes. And one of the nice things about Dr. Rose's is when the healing process happens, you don't end up with the scar tissue and things. They have some really graphic examples of that if you stop by their booth at a show sometime, or check out their website. If you're a tack shop, vet clinic, or pet store, please write to Dr. Roses through their website, and they will send you out for some free samples. To learn all about the products and read some reviews of people who have used it, go to drrosesremedies.com, drrosesremedies.com, and tell them that Glenn and Jamie sent you. We love this stuff. We use it on our horses. We can't recommend it highly enough. Just visit drrosesremedies.com. Good morning, Michelle. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Are you done running around the countryside now?
I am. I am finally back home after East Coast, West Coast. Now I'm back in Bend, Oregon.
Do you feel highly health educated after all these health conferences you went to?
I'm terrified.
You see, they just make you paranoid, don't they?
No, there's been some really great information and information that we're getting out to our users on the website. So it's totally worth it. I was at the Infectious Disease Symposium, which we've all talked about on this show, and then I just got back from the laminitis conference from this last weekend, which is what we're going to discuss today with Dr. Greniger. So, yeah,
all
lots
right.
of information.
Well, let's do our official opening then.
Okay.
For the weekly health report from horse.com. Fantastic information and their attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
That's right. It's the horse.com with the weekly horse health report. We have Michelle Anderson, who is the digital editor of The Horse, here with us every week, and we appreciate you joining us here, Michelle. Do you want to introduce your guest?
I have Dr. Nora Greniger with me, and she was also at the laminitis conference this last weekend, one of the faculty members of that conference. She was a speaker and helped organize it, and she is with Greniger Equine Consulting in Virginia. Welcome, Doctor.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the conference so that the listeners can learn about what's going on when everyone gets together to talk about laminitis. What's the purpose of this conference?
Excellent question. It's a good place to start. The conference started over 10 years ago, actually, on the East Coast. It was initially called the International Conference on Laminitis and Diseases of the Foot. The conference organizers saw that laminitis was a huge area of both research and interest for equine veterinarians and farriers and horse owners alike, and really wanted to have a forum to bring together the best minds to both discuss their research and talk about what they were seeing on cases out in the field setting, to try to get all those groups together so that we would be able to both promote a better understanding of the disease and get to the bottom of this really devastating disease. So it's been really a wonderful group to be a part of. And the East Coast Conference, like I said, started over 10 years ago. And then 6 years ago, we started actually the West Coast version because we wanted people to bring that information out to the western half of the United States.
And so this year we met in Monterey, California, which was really beautiful. Right. It's hard to be in a conference in such a beautiful place.
It's true.
But it was a good conference, so it made it worthwhile. So who all is involved in putting this on?
It's definitely a group effort. The conference, Dr. James Orsini from the University of Pennsylvania New Bolton Center is really the instigator behind all of this. He started the East Coast International Conference, which really is the place where laminitis research and work gets discussed. And he was both willing and able and excited about bringing that to the West Coast. So Dr. Orsini, obviously there's some wonderful people who help in terms of conference organization. And then in terms of the West Coast, Steinbeck Country Equine Clinic in Salinas, California, which is right next to Monterey where we were, owned by Tim and Alex Eastman, have been the sponsors and organizers, along with myself, who used to work there. So that's kind of the original veterinary set. And a lot of this was initially helped with funding from a wonderful couple named John and Marion Castle, who Dr. Orsini worked with them on their horse that had laminitis. And so they were one of the big promoters of getting all of this started initially.
And that horse was Spot Castle, and his story, I think I saw that on the laminitis conference website. And Steinbeck was a beautiful clinic for the wet labs with all the hands-on work that we got to see as well. But so for this year, who was in the crowd?
It was a pretty diverse mix of veterinarians, farriers, veterinary students, farrier students, and horse owners. And that's really one of the big things with this conference is that we understand the critical necessity for chlamydia to be really addressed as a by a team. And so there's a veterinarian, a farrier, and an owner attached, you know, to each chlamydia course. And if we can all work together, the likelihood of a good outcome is just that much better. So we therefore also drive the conference to have all those groups involved.
Great. And you and Dr. Orsini did an opening presentation on what's hot and what's not in laminitis,
yeah.
Or what's hot and what's cold in laminitis. Can you touch on just some of the high points of that discussion for us?
Sure, and I'll do my best to be brief.
There was a lot. I know there was a lot.
Sure. And so what we did, yes, was cover some of the highlights from last year's international conference where a lot of research and kind of clinical developments were presented. Probably the biggest things that have been happening over the last few years is that we're really, thanks to these intensive researchers, coming to understand what's happening on a, you know, both a cellular and systemic level in laminitis. So we've made a lot of progress in understanding the types of inflammation that happen in the foot, because laminitis, by definition, is inflammation within the foot. And we've, by understanding more and more what happens sort of at each stage of disease, we can better target treatments to each stage of disease. So that's kind of one big highlight. And we've also come a long way in sort of understanding that there's sort of several different paths or ways, kind of instigating factors that cause and lead to laminitis that we see. But once laminitis has started, for a lot of intents and purposes, a lot of the management and treatment modalities are similar. And so we're really getting a better understanding that horses with severe systemic inflammation, regardless of the source, whether it's an infection or grain overload or retained placenta with infection, anything where they have really severe systemic inflammation, that inflammation really affects the foot. And people have broken down, you know, every kind of inflammatory factor and mediator that is reacting in the foot to that, which again helps us better understand how to treat that. So anti-inflammatory therapy remains a huge part of treating laminitis. And we've come a long way in understanding that. And some of the big anti-inflammatories we still use after all these years are things like bute, orbanamine, or furacoxib, and ice, just soaking feet in ice. So there's a lot more information about that out there at this point. But that's one big side of things. And the other is the horses that have endocrine disease, so either the really easy keeper horse that's got what we call insulin resistance or metabolic syndrome, or the older horse that has Cushing's syndrome. And that's kind of a second big class of horses who get laminitis. And again, our understanding of how to both diagnose and treat those is getting better kind of every year we do this conference.
And I was really impressed with the podiatry sessions that I went to.
Yeah.
And Chris Gregory, who is from Heartland Horseshoeing School in Missouri, was there as a presenter. And then Dr. Raul Brass from Root and Riddle. Did you get a chance to sit in on any of the podiatry sessions? You're an internal medicine specialist, and I don't think I made that clear in the beginning.
Yeah, that's right. And I was so excited to have the two of them there. They're both really renowned farriers. And as you said, they present some really interesting information. Our ability to provide appropriate kind of foot support for these laminitic horses, again, with people like Chris and Raul, kind of constantly working at this and trying to figure out what's best for the horses, has really come a long way. And so they each have a lot of different ways of approaching things, which is important because every horse's foot and every horse and every laminitic case is different. And again, having a farrier who looks at that foot and the entire horse from, you know, from all angles, and understanding what's going to be best for that horse is really key. So, for example, Chris Gregory often creates these beautiful W shoes, which are sort of an adaptation or have some similar characteristics to the heart bar, but are different in a lot of ways too, and has found those to be really useful in a lot of situations. And watching him create one of those on the wet, at the wet lab on Saturday and apply it on a limb, and then of course was really exciting. And Dr. Bross does a lot of other different kinds of shoeings as well. In addition, he's a big promoter of using foot casts, and so we got to see him apply a couple of those on Saturday afternoon as well. So they were really fantastic at opening up the discussion so that everyone could talk about what they'd seen. And again, that's how we get somewhere with this disease, is people thinking outside of the box and talking to each other and learning from each other.
Yeah, it really made me realize how far we've come in taking care of those feet once the horse is laminitic. I know that there's still a ways to go, but a lot of art as well as science to managing these horses.
Definitely, and they reminded us, and you know, it's a good thing to always remember that. I said it before, but it's so critical. Every case is different, and obviously, if there was one thing that worked all the time, we would just all be doing that. But there's not, and so you really need the farrier vet owner team is willing to be constantly making changes and you know, treating each horse individually.
And you mentioned owners, and there was also an owners program. Is that something that you guys do every year with this conference?
We have for the last, I want to say even 4 or 5 conferences, yes, and probably intermittently before that. But the horse owner world, as you well know, just love to have knowledge and be informed about how best to care for their horse, and especially with a disease like laminitis, where it's often a long treatment and management process. Having horse owners who understand what we're doing and why we're doing what we're doing, and are a huge part of that day to day care team for that horse, is really critical. So it's been wonderful having them be a part of the conference, and we learn from them too, so it's great.
And some really great sessions on diagnostics for horse owners that I appreciated, going through MRI at a level that I, as a horse owner, can really understand what we're looking at when we decide to spend the money on that MRI and see what's going on inside that hoof. So I know I really appreciated that. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us this morning and fill us in. It was a great conference. I really enjoyed it. And thank you for helping out with some videos that we did with some videos on thehorse.com. We answered questions from Facebook fans about laminitis, and Dr. Greninger was kind enough to respond to a couple of those. So if you get on thehorse.com, those are still featured on the homepage. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. It was really wonderful having you there as well. And any way we can get this information out to people, I appreciate it. So thanks for having me on today as well.
Thank you,
Doctor. Well, good. Thank you, Michelle. We appreciate you bringing that. And I got to say, we got to talk about this. The new horse.com is pretty snazzy.
I was wondering if you had noticed.
Oh, I noticed. It's very nice. Wow, it's terrific.
Thank you.
It's so easy to get around now. Everything's laid out very nicely, and I love how you have it broken up with, you know, the different sections broken up on the homepage.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, there's a big team behind putting together the website and the print magazine. We have lots of really smart people back there, programmers, designers, and then those of us who are working on content all coming together, because we want that information to be easy for people to find, easy to understand, easy to find when you need it, because sometimes I know you go out. I know I have gone out and seen something weird, and I come back in and look on thehorse.com to figure out what's going on before I call my vet. So, we're really excited about it, and we still have all of the same great stuff we've always had. It's just in a little bit prettier package.
Well, and the old site had been around for a while and had been redesigned for a while. And part of that problem is, and I've done this because I've, you know, worked on websites for years, is it's very difficult to change a website when you have that much content on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's where the real trouble comes in.
And we have so much content, close to 40,000 different pieces of different articles, videos, PDFs, audio. So there's just was a ton of stuff to organize. We tried to make it really intuitive. And as far as the different diseases and conditions of the horses, even that, you know, trying to sort through how people organize those different subjects and how they'd be looking for them, you know, it was definitely a labor of love. So we're glad to have it out there for everyone to enjoy.
And I want to thank you because we're right up there, podcasts. And we're still there on your website. We really appreciate that.
Right there at the top.
Of course, mm-hmm. Horse Radio Network. And you know what other thing I like looking at when I come on here is right underneath the opening picture, right in the middle of the page there, you have the latest articles and the most viewed articles. And it's always interesting to take a look at what people are viewing the most, mm-hmm. especially on a health site like this. And it, you know, because one of the things we found with Facebook now is fluff really gets people going. You know, if you, the fluffy stuff is what really, you know, people respond to. So what's the first article on your most viewed right now? Snakes linked to spread of equine encephalitis. Anytime you put snakes in there.
Ew! And that one, I have to say, that's been at the top for at least a week, I think. Because I remember proofing that, and it's been more than a week ago that I took a look at that article. So, yeah, that, you know, people are concerned.
So here we go. We got snakes at the top. We have the New York Racing Association donates to Sandy Relief. Anything with Sandy in it's probably going to be popular right now. Advances in equine joint pain medicine. Everybody's interested in pain. I mean, it is interesting seeing what's popping up here, and I'm sure for you guys, you get that anyway. But here now, you can just quickly go here and see what's leading the pack too.
Yeah, it definitely keeps us abreast of what people are really, really interested in. So try to keep it interesting for everyone. We always have lots of good stuff. You know, we get at least, you know, 5 different news pieces every day on there to keep everyone up to date on what's going on with welfare and research and, you know, all that great stuff. So every day, check it. There's always new stuff every day.
And we're
also
talking
new
a little bit
pictures. I don't know if you noticed that, but we have a lot more pictures.
I did notice that, and that's nice, too, because we all like pictures, especially us people like me that don't like to read as much. So the one thing article I did notice on here, we were talking about the Breeders' Cup earlier and figuring out who won that particular picking challenge. And by the way, Jamie won our Breeders' Cup picking challenge. But that all the samples of all the drug, all the horses tested from the Breeders' Cup came back negative. So that was a good thing.
Good stuff.
All looking
and
that's
that stuff too. We keep you up to date on all of that as well. So.
Now, a lot of people are confused. The horse.com is actually owned by the Blood Horse, or you guys are part of the Blood Horse, or are they partners? How does that work?
It's Blood Horse Publishing, or Blood Horse Publications. You know, started out as Blood Horse Magazine and then added, you know, different titles. So we do a lot of different stuff. We also have Eclipse Press, which is a book publisher. And so, yeah, we are owned by Blood Horse Publications, which is the publisher of Blood Horse Magazine and The Horse and Eclipse Press.
Very good. And I want to just clarify what I said earlier. You have the podcast section on thehorse.com. You can actually listen to The Horses in the Morning Show live right on thehorse.com. It's one of our affiliates. So you can listen to past episodes or the live episode right there on that website as well. Well, thank you very much, Michelle. We appreciate you being here, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, thanks. Talk to you later.
Well, that's going to – I think. Was there anything else we had to cover here today? I just wanted to wish everybody the best up in the Northeast because they're about to get hit by a nor'easter. And did you know, Jennifer, that they are naming the winter storms now?
Really?
Yeah, I don't know what the requirement is or how much storm it has to be to get named. But, why we named, and by the way, the name of this particular storm is Athena. The winter storm team has named the current, I had heard about this. Weather.com was going to start naming them. Has named the
Weather.com's doing it. Okay.
Yeah. Has named the current nor'easter winter storm Athena based on the following potential impacts. Up to 6 inches of snowfall combined with winds over 35 miles an hour. So apparently that's what they're using as. And, of course, what's going to get it? Eastern Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, everything that was hit by all of the storms before. and there's that Sandy last week, and there actually are evacuating parts of the New Jersey coast as well as some sections of New York again.
Yeah, the last thing you need to be stuck in is a nor'easter if you don't have good power, you know?
Well, they said that they've gotten the power outages down to 800,000. And
oh,
yeah, so down from almost 10 million. So they are reducing the number of people without power, but it's going to be cold.
That's a really great statistic if you're not one of the 800,000.
Exactly. But they're expecting 10 inches of snow in some places and heavy winds and rain in other places, and it's just going to be your typical nor'easter. So our best to everybody who lives up there. You guys certainly deserve a break. I'm sure glad we live in Florida where there's no hurricanes. So nice.
Don't keep saying that. Just don't.
I'm just kidding. Just kidding. I knocked on wood.
You cannot kid faith.
That's true. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up today. Congratulations to Udy. Jamie will be back on Friday. And we'll be back here with really bad ads. Do we know what the prize is this week?
This week's prize is going to be an amazingly fantastic prize.
We don't know yet, do we?
We don't know yet.
Okay. There will be a prize for really bad ads. Get in your entries to Jennifer@HorseRadioNetwork.com. That's Jennifer@HorseRadioNetwork.com. And maybe, Jennifer, you could post that on Facebook, too, and encourage people to send their ads in for this week. We'll see you, everybody. Thank you so much. We'll be back here on Friday. And I'm here once again. I can't find the closing. There it is. Too many sound files today. Bye, everybody. Stay neutered and geld.